Thank you, Malcolm. And thanks for that great overview, Robert. And thanks everyone for coming this afternoon. I look forward to a much livelier discussion than you're hearing us present to you. So we'll all get ready for that. So I did the little disclosure thing just to be to follow the rules, and I don't have any relationships to disclose related to this presentation, other than to say that I hope that it succeeds, so that we all in the countries that we work in benefit from it. I'm also going to do a little bit of reading during this presentation, which is a bit atypical for me, but I am representing a coalition of organizations that I want to make sure that I accurately and thoroughly represent our views, so I just want to warn you about that. So in May 2009, around the same time that the Global Health Initiative was announced, we, Partners in Health, was able to host a very small meeting with funding from the John C. Lloyd Foundation to bring together representatives from different health sectors working in global health. And the original idea was actually to bring together HIV/AIDS folks and folks from the primary healthcare movement to learn from one another, learn from each other's successes, failures, and how do we work together moving forward to advance global health. And we ended up, that did happen, but we also brought in players from a lot of other different areas, including reproductive health, women's health, child health. We had academics, we had in all of like 25 people, so it's not like there were thousands of us. But we had academics, we had NGOs, we had many other groups, and it was a really nice little meeting. And from that, a lot of different, and I'm not telling you this to tout our horn, what I'm doing is just providing a little background here for this coalition. And so a lot of little efforts actually sprang from it, and one of which is our Global Health Coalition. So you see a smattering of logos there of organizations that came together following our little meeting in May to look at this new thing called the Global Health Initiative. And what was it, what could it be, and how will it impact the programs that we all care deeply about. And so, you know, the initial project that this coalition worked on together was actually what our vision of what a global health initiative should be, and what it could be. And what we felt that the world of global health from the US donor perspective really should look like, how amazing it could be, and all the different pieces and parts that should be a part of it. So we wrote it down into a document, which I did not bring copies of with me, but you can actually find it at theglobalhealthinitiative.org. We kind of stole the name, sorry. And what we really felt like this initiative should have were very bold targets. Targets that all of the organizations, UN agencies, other groups have been working on for decades and updating repeatedly about progress that needs to be made. We had the MDGs to fall back on. We had all the different interest groups from reproductive health to maternal mortality reduction to HIV/AIDS, et cetera, healthcare workforce groups have all been working on targets and costing these achievements out for years. And so this document was actually relatively easy. If getting 25 organizations to work together is easy, to put together with the targets and the costing, et cetera. We also felt in 2009 the huge momentum from President Obama's election, from the new administration, from all of the new processes that were going on in global health, and that there was a lot of momentum and that this could actually be used to really galvanize the world, galvanize Congress, galvanize everyone who to raise more money and to really dream big about what we could do in global health. And so these are just, and I'm not going to go through these, I promise, but these are some of the targets that had been set and that we had included in the document that we put together, looking at, you know, 35 million births being, you know, safe births, 40 million women getting quality antenatal care, not just antenatal care, which often happens, HIV/AIDS treatment for 6 million people, TB care for, I think we had about 4 million people for DOTS and 600,000 MDR, or sorry, 90,000, we had 4.5 million TB patients for DOTS and 90,000 MDR TB cases, things that, many of which were also included in Lantos-Hyde, the reauthorization of PEPFAR, and so had also already been codified by law, and we just put into this document. And we thought maybe it was going to cost a little bit more than $63 billion. This was also before all craziness broke loose in the world economy. But so we came up with a $95 billion price tag, which, considering we thought it was only sort of half, you know, 50% more than what the administration had come up with, we were fairly proud of ourselves for reining ourselves in. But also didn't think it was that outrageous, considering that PEPFAR had been reauthorized for $48 billion, and new initiatives and new programs were being thought up, and a lot of talk about more and better programming for women's health, for child health, for maternal mortality reduction, for family planning, for neglected tropical diseases. We really did not feel that this was an outrageous ask, and in fact, we did have, you know, some congressional support behind us on this. We had a big launch, actually, on the House side in, I want to say, November, December of 2009, where we had a packed room in the House with several members of Congress who joined us to share their vision for a global health initiative, and that also to, you know, really, we also held several meetings with folks from USAID, State Department, many of the other OGAC, many of the other agencies that are involved in the Global Health Initiative, one-on-ones or members of the coalition also meeting with these groups. And then many of us also participated in the several consultations that were held officially by the State Department and others, USAID, trying to pull this thing together. So in February 2010, when the consultation document was released, we also put out a response to that. And we, given how much information we had shared with the various representatives from the agencies and people that were working intimately on developing the Global Health Initiative concept, we had some real concerns with what came out originally. I just want to briefly discuss some of those concerns, and that's where I'm going to do a little bit of reading. The first concern that we had was from the get-go, a real focus on cost-effectiveness. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and say that I don't think that doing things in a costly manner and in efficient manner is an important thing to do, is not an important thing to do. What I will say, though, is that in global health, and in particular in the U.S. Approach to global health, cost-effectiveness has actually been pretty much a code word for cheap, and in fact has led to a lot of poor decisions, programmatic decisions, when it comes to treating drug-resistant tuberculosis, when it comes to reducing maternal mortality. And in fact, you know, it's just led to less effective interventions. And, you know, we know that to avert maternal deaths, that we need more trained midwives, nurses, and OBGYNs. We need deliveries to happen in well-equipped health centers and hospitals that are accessible to all women and who may require care for complicated deliveries and that, you know, could require blood transfusions, C-sections, and good postpartum care. The previous emphasis was on a lot of quick win solutions like training TBAs, and not really putting in the structural health sector systems that need to be put into place to actually solve these problems. And I know Robert said that that's going to be one of the initiatives, focuses of the GHI, but it's we really haven't seen that come out in program description. When it comes to multi-drug resistant TB, which you will know is near and dear to my heart, you know, lowering the number of cases, target cases to be treated over 6 years as compared to the number that were going to be treated in, according to Lantos-Hyde, over 5 years is also a huge concern. We have a huge and growing burden of multi-drug resistant tuberculosis around the world. 500 incident cases every year, we have known this for at least a decade, and we're only aiming to treat 57,000 of those over the next 6 years. You, if you have any infectious disease background, can imagine the transmission and the death, the needless deaths that will occur if we're setting our targets so incredibly low. The other, another concern we had was lack of scale. That, you know, the targets that we had set out versus the targets that the GHI has actually included, we really feel that the scale is not going to be significant enough to actually have an impact, a significant impact on health and health delivery systems in recipient countries. One of the biggest reasons why PEPFAR and PMI have been so successful is because they had really bold targets and serious finance behind them. You can quibble and quabble about effectiveness of individual programs, but as a global health program from a US-funded perspective, PEPFAR stands out there as probably the most successful program. And so we really need to be learning lessons from that, and on a scale that can be replicable, that shows replication all around the world. We have been concerned about the discussion around health systems, and that in fact they're not really linked, while the idea is there behind much of the global health initiatives, not really linked to specific inputs, and in fact there doesn't seem to be enough information in there about whether or not there's going to be enough money for you know, the specific numbers of healthcare workers which are going to be required to implement all of the bold initiatives, as well as even the amount of drugs which will be required. The targets that were set out, the prevention of 360,000 maternal deaths and 3 million child deaths over the six-year time frame, would imply investments in maternal and child health annually of at least $2.5 billion to even up to $5 billion a year for to get to that level of death reduction. And also for the child mortality reduction, we'd need somewhere between $400 to $800 million per year. Now, $12 billion that's been set aside for MCH, family planning, and neglected tropical diseases does not come close to meeting those targets, unfortunately. And also, these figures that I just listed are figures that assume that full funding actually will be invested directly in services, either paying salaries, paying for equipment that will go to helping serve the patients, not for technical assistance. And so a large, not that we've seen a budget breakdown of the GHI from the agencies, but there's a significant concern that a lot of money is actually targeted towards technical assistance to the GHI plus countries, much of which has actually been shown in the past to not be the most effective means of assistance in development. And I could go on and on about that, but I won't, because I'm running out of time. I think the other thing is that, you know, we're just really waiting to see much more of a concrete operational plan. And I know that this is being worked on, and I know that many of us have had input into it. But without that, we're all sort of left in the dark to wonder and to criticize what exactly it is, and what more specifically, how specifically the GHI plans to address some of these problems. One is just how the GHI fits into the overall picture of foreign aid reform. And while I think, unfortunately, we've lost the opportunity to do a whole lot of reform on the Hill in the next couple of years with foreign aid reform, we do have the Quadrennial Development and Diplomacy Review going on at the State Department. We have this Presidential Study Directive that's also being completed and has been, parts of it have been leaked. And the question that many of us have had is exactly how does the GHI fit into this? And how will the lessons learned from these big, expensive studies that are going on be reflected in GHI rollout? I just want to repeat that the decrease in the targets from the Lantos-Hyde Act are also a huge concern when it comes to HIV and tuberculosis. But also, one of the other biggest concerns is also the lack of direct numbers mentioned in the GHI about healthcare workers. Number of new healthcare workers who will be trained to help implement these projects. Lantos-Hyde, actually, the PEPFAR reauthorization, has a 140,000 new healthcare worker mandate in it, which is way behind schedule, obviously, for any of you who were paying attention to it, but there is a numeric mandate for new healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, midwives, even community health workers, to help implement some of these new programs. And in order to meet some of the targets that have even the lower targets that have been set by the GHI, millions would actually have to be trained. And we're not seeing either emphasis on that or any kind of significant funding that would come to support those new healthcare workers. Quickly, I already touched on the health workforce issues. We also were concerned about civil society participation in the sort of operational plan development, and I know that it's been said that civil society will be present at the meetings and in the plan developments, but I do think we'd like to see more information and hear more from the countries themselves on how well this is progressing. And also, there is a lack of information on R&D. Even though it's a focus of the GHI, there is a lack of information about how much of the resources will be devoted to R&D, which we know we have great needs for in all of the target areas that the GHI is focusing on. So to finish up, I think, at least at Partners in Health, and I think a lot of other people working in Haiti really felt like post-earthquake, we had a real opportunity to do things differently. We had a real opportunity to change the business as usual as the way that aid is being implemented, planned, and done. And honestly, for 10 months, we've seen very little new. Very little. Now, I know GHI is still being rolled out. I know that Haiti is not a GHI-focused country right now. But I do know that what we're seeing is a lot of business as usual, and it's concerning. I don't want this to sound entirely critical. I know that there are a lot of bright minds and exciting new people in the agencies that are working on this and are trying to come up with new things and better approaches and better takes. But these are our nurses working on the cholera epidemic in Port-au-Prince now, who are exhausted and who are not seeing any kind of change in helping them to actually get anything done and accomplished. So last thing, what the coalition will be paying attention to in the near future is looking at the results that are coming out from the QDDR and the PSD, following progress on the GHI strategy, which was supposed to be released sometime this fall. We would love to have new additional coalition members join us in our sort of watchdog role, in our response role, and also just tracking general GHI progress. The International Health Section, which sponsored this session today, is actually a part of APHA, is part of the GHI coalition. We welcome members from all parts, all the sections and all the affiliates at APHA, and I hope you'll join us in this in the future. Thank you.